It happened. It really happened. It's not a dream. Most considered it impossible. No team in 32 tries had ever come back from being down 3-1 to win the NBA Finals. Now, it's 1-32. LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers completed the impossible. A Game 7 victory over the Golden State Warriors in Oakland. Yes, against those Golden State Warriors. The same Golden State team that set the NBA record for the most wins. The same Golden State team that set NBA scoring records and fielded the reigning MVP. The same Golden State team that hoisted the Larry O'Brien Trophy last year, and the same Golden State team that had a 3-1 NBA Finals lead over the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron James and his relentless, never-count-them-out Cavs pulled off an improbable NBA Finals comeback. In Cleveland, it's title town again at long last. James delivered on a vow to his home state and brought an end to a 52-year major sports championship drought in Cleveland, Ohio.
You are listening to On Further Review.
On Further Review is a conversation that uncovers the fascinating details of the most remarkable sporting events. Events you grew up watching and maybe a couple you've never heard of before.
Join our discussion of upsets, dynasties, and how one event can be the difference between being a footnote and being a legend. This is On Further Review. All right, so the 2016 NBA Finals, one of the most legendary finals, in my opinion, in history. I think this is something I was actually kind of joking about the other day, that this is something where for years and years moving forward, anytime someone's in a deep hole in a playoff series and anything like that, this one's going to come up. This one's going to be talked about. And I think probably giving people false hope for years and years to come, just with the craziness that transpired here in the 2016 NBA Finals. So we all know, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I know we're eagerly awaiting, for some of us that are NBA fans, eagerly awaiting the start of the next season, whenever that's going to start here in 2020. With some changes, and we all know the season ended real late. But as we think ahead towards the NBA season starting, wanted to revisit and relive, kind of review this 2016 Finals between the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So little backdrop, I think it's important to kind of go back and look at the 2015 Finals, also played by Golden State and Cleveland. One thing that stands out to me looking back in review is I think the Warriors coming into 2015 were a little bit ahead of their time, a little bit ahead of what we anticipated this team to be. So in 2015, you have the Warriors kind of come out of, come out of nowhere to make the finals. Just this barrage of three-pointers, this barrage of open, wide-open offense that to this day has changed the NBA. It doesn't look the same. I mean, if you're 7 feet tall, you'll probably still get a shot at, you know, a major college and maybe the NBA. But now people ask, how are you from mid-range? How are you from three? Because the spacing, I really credit a lot of that. I mean, it was starting to happen before, but what Steve Kerr did when he wound up taking the Golden State job, with especially with these guards of Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, is remarkable. And I think changed the game for what we have today.
Yeah, it absolutely did. I think if you look at the trajectory of NBA, that's going to be one of those marker moments. If you look at the evolution of the NBA game, I think that's on par with the development of the forward pass in the NFL, the time limit for baseball for pitchers. Like that, we kind of just go along with it without realizing that that was a historical making team right there. Not just because of how good they were, but how they really changed how basketball is going to be played.
Right, and they set it up like that, you know. And like you mentioned, in other sports, we see that too. You know, I think in baseball too, of like the shift, you know, things like that, that just kind of, they're not overt, but you see them just infiltrate so much. And for me, what happened, or when I look back, in my opinion, in 2015, it's this lineup of death, right? This death lineup where the Warriors just commit, hey, we're going to go small and we're going to take all the threes. We're going to spread the ball around. So in 2015, the Warriors' real come out party, right? It was their announcement of just how good this team could be. And we see that specifically, again, I keep coming back to the threes and what that's done for the game. So in 2015, Steph Curry actually sets the record for threes with 286 that year. The NBA record, 286 threes, 2015. They're pretty dominant. The Warriors lead the league that year in pace, defensive rating, net rating. No team had ever led in those three categories before. For all you nerds like me that love stats like that. But this was, you know, they had, the Spurs were still really good, coming off of, you know, battles with LeBron and the Heat. The Clippers, people often forget about, were a real good team that year. And in 2015, the Warriors just came through that West. They came through that West loaded, with other teams. I know, the Thunder had injuries, but they had Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook that year as well, you know, as contenders. So in my mind, kind of, we kind of lose sight of it with the dominance the Warriors have shown since, but 2015 really being that coming out party for them. And they get to the finals 2015 and they go up against LeBron, who's back in Cleveland after a nice hiatus in Miami where, right, took his talents there, as we all know. Cleveland had their heart ripped out by him leaving. I know you've spent a bit of time in Cleveland. You could attest to just the ups and downs of that city, and especially for LeBron, just having been the focal point, the standpoint, that their champion for so many years for the city of Cleveland, for the state of Ohio. He leaves, goes to Miami. They're going to win 7 or 8 according to their little pep rally, kind of semi underachieves, but comes away with a couple championships, then comes back home, right? I'm coming home. You know, that song played on loop and LeBron comes back 2015, gets all the way to the finals and faces this kind of team from nowhere, not nowhere, but this surprise, surprise opponent in the Warriors that year. It was the Warriors' first. The Warriors go on to win 2015. They wind up winning the series 4-2. But some key factors in that series there.
Yeah, the Cavs lost two of their top three players, including LeBron James. They lost Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, and I can't think of the guy's name who kind of came off the bench and just racked up points for the Cavs, some no-name guy, and played his heart out to the point where afterwards he was hospitalized for exhaustion. Like the guy gave it his absolute.
Was it the little guard? Was it Dellavedova?
Yeah.
Matthew Dellavedova. Yeah. All heart. I have been compared to him in the sense that neither of us typically hit shots and we're just out there throwing our bodies around. So that's a little bit of shade to someone that becomes an NBA championship or an NBA champion rather. But Matthew Dellavedova or Dellavedova. I can't remember how to say his name, but yeah, he's fun. He's just gives it his all. But like you said, undermanned, Kyrie and Love both go out in that series. LeBron leads all players in that series with 35.8 points per game, 13.3 rebounds per game, and 8.8 assists per game. He's the first player to ever lead the NBA finals in total rebounds, points, and assists either assists scored on or assists made, 66% of all of his team's field goals in the finals. To put it in comparison, Michael Jordan's highest ratio of either points scored or assisted on was 56.3 and 91, and LeBron's here in 2015 at 66. So you talk about Dellavedova.
Almost 11 points higher than him.
Right.
Than
percentage Jordan. Wise. So Dellavedova gave his, you know, you mentioned gave his all. LeBron definitely gave his all this year in 2015. And I remember as the series came to an end and, you know, the Warriors win in six, I remember there being a legitimate debate about whether or not LeBron should win MVP in a losing effort. And that's kind of seen because what do? They give the finals MVP to Iguodala, which is funny for the defense he played on LeBron in 2015. But LeBron actually set records on everything he played.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But I think that was kind of the nod to LeBron and the losing effort. So that's 2015, right? It's the lead up to this. It's the announcement party for the Warriors. It's LeBron coming in shorthanded, given his all, not being enough for this team that spreads it out and shoots from three all the time.
And it sets stuff up for the next year, for a year where we say, okay, it was the Golden State a fluke, and what can LeBron do with a healthy Kyrie and a
Absolutely.
Healthy Kevin Love?
Yeah, going into 2016, the idea is it's nice. The Warriors, cool story. Wow, the Steph Curry guy's kind of fun to watch. But LeBron was out his top two teammates, you know, was this real? What can we expect from the Warriors moving forward? And I'll say this, 2016 in the regular season was all about the Warriors. They won 24 straight games. They had six streaks of five or more, four streaks of seven or more, and a league record 73 wins overall. They came out in defense of their 2015 title on fire. Just crazy, crazy how dominant they were. They had literally beaten everyone. They beat every team in the NBA in the regular season at least once. Steph Curry breaks his own record from three at 286 in 2015 by hitting 402 threes. 402. He shatters his own league setting or NBA setting record for three. He's the unanimous MVP. He's on fire. They're all the talk is going for the record for most wins. Like I said, they finished 73 overall. And then we get into the playoffs and this is all, you know, it's the Warriors' year. It just seems like that 2015, they've proven not a fluke. They're here to stay. They're here to not just be good, but to dominate everyone. I've often maintained to me, the best team in NBA history might be up there. We'll say in the top 20 best teams of NBA history, the 2016 Warriors have to be mentioned. They were just absolutely dominant for their time. The teams they were playing, just absolutely incredible. So we get into the playoffs. I don't want to spend a ton of time, you know, in the lead up as we want to get to these finals. But one quick thing to mention was the Warriors, you know, this team of destiny, this team of history. LeBron kind of takes a back seat with what he and Cleveland are doing, but they have a great season in 2016 as well.
Well, they kind of had an up and down season too. So they start off decently, and then I think it was against Golden State where they got drummed by Golden State. And it was after that game that they brought in Tyronn Lue as the new, because they were just something was a little off about them. They weren't quite there. So they bring in the new coach and Tyronn Lue to kind of being a former point guard himself. They kind of wanted to get more crispness and more precision and more exactness from their players. And so they brought in Lue, and that kind of helped turn their season around. Before they were doing okay, but it was definitely an up and down kind of year until that moment, I think, was against the Warriors, where Warriors just kind of blew them out of the water.
I mean, which they were doing to everybody, but kind of set the tone, like you said, for Cleveland to take this at a different look. You know, the same old, maybe not working for what they wanted.
And it was quite a move too at the time to think about it, to fire the coach that brought you, that won you a Eastern Conference final the previous year. You had a winning record at the time, or it wasn't like you were losing a record or you were struggling, but they made a culture change with Lou in spite of, you know, the success of the previous coach had.
And that's what, I mean, to their credit, that's what good teams do, right? Or great teams do. Great teams aren't satisfied with good enough. Great teams are looking, you know, they saw after that, like you said, that drubbing from the Warriors, or just not having the dominance or the, like you said, culture that they wanted, that, listen, where we want to go, we need to make some changes. And to their credit, they made that change. Cause that's, to me, that's one of the toughest things in sports, is to be above average good. You can get complacent in that versus taking that final step of what's required to get to the championship.
You can get complacent, and you also can feel that maybe, you know, just have more time to develop or whatever. You know, you look at the, here in Arizona, you have the Josh Rosen and now the Kyler Murray, right? So you draft use a high draft pick on Josh Rosen, and Bidwell, for his credit, the GM or the president and the GM over there for the Phoenix area, the Phoenix Cardinals. What does he do? He goes ahead and he says, nope, ship out Rosen, bring in Kyler Murray, in who is currently the NFC West leaders, the Arizona Cardinals, thanks to a phenomenal catch by D. Hopkins there. So, but those kind of decisions are not easy to make, just to look at yourself and say, you know what, I made a mistake with this individual. He's not where I want to get. He's not going to be able to get me to where I want to go, and to go ahead and change that midstream. For the Cavs to do that in the middle of the 2016 season, when they had their hopes set on another championship run.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And credit to Cleveland, because, you know, we'll be talking about them here in the 2016 finals. So it obviously worked to push them back to that level. One quick note of the final, or of the NBA playoffs, that I thought was interesting. So the Thunder are back in the West, healthy Kevin Durant, healthy Russell Westbrook, which they hadn't been able to have both in the same year for a couple years there. They go up 3-1 on the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals. And the Warriors, Klay Thompson goes off. I think it was game 5 or 6, just incredible, incredible game. And kind of turns the page on it. And they wind up coming back from that 3-1 hole in the Western Conference Finals, which they were one of three to ever do that in a Western Conference or in a conference finals. So pretty impressive. This team that seems like team of destiny in the Warriors faces that adversity in the final round of the Western Conference and overcomes it, you know, to set up this repeat matchup, this back-to-back finals of the Warriors versus the Cavs. So let's get into the actual finals here, right? 2016, all set up. This team of destiny overcomes this hurdle of the Thunder, the Cavs, as you mentioned, you know, kind of so-so through the year, make some changes, make some adjustments to get to where they need to be. Back here in the NBA Finals and healthy. They've got Kyrie, they've got Love, unlike 2015. They're ready to go, setting up this epic rematch. So game one starts for the 2016 Finals, and Golden State right back to their dominant self. The one quick note from a couple of these games as we go through, but game one, the Golden State bench outscores Cleveland's bench 45-10. I mean, we know guys like Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, but these are guys like Sean Livingston, Leandro Barbosa, Andre Iguodala. Like, these guys are coming off the bench and getting buckets themselves. And it's not even, you can just tell from the tip. I mean, the Cavs put up a good fight, but it almost feels like, okay, so maybe going into 2016, the idea is that, you know, LeBron didn't have Kyrie. He didn't have Love last year. Let's see what LeBron can really do with a full deck against this Warriors team. And they come out and win game one, 104-89, just kind of dominant from the bench. And Curry even mentioned after game one, it's a great sign, he says, obviously, that we can win the NBA Finals without having Curry and Thompson, without Curry and Thompson having big games. Like, this was just like, just showing the Warriors' depth of the ability to score. So game one goes that way. It's set in Oakland. Game two is one of the most lopsided victories in an NBA Finals. And the Warriors wind up taking that one, 110-77. Cleveland hangs around. I was able to rewatch a lot of these games, and you can find them YouTube or online there from different avenues. But Cleveland hangs around for about a quarter, and then it's all the Warriors. Game two, Draymond was incredible. Winds up finishing with 28 points. Their team as a whole shoots 54%. From the field, and it just kind of feels, I mean, everybody says in the NBA Finals, right, you're supposed to win at home, so no one's freaking out, no one's really getting too far ahead of themselves. Curry, even after game two, is interviewed, and he says, you know, listen, we're optimistic, but we're not trying to get ahead of ourselves.
I don't think people are getting ahead of themselves. Maybe I think Golden State is well enough coached and professional enough not to count, you know, to count things before, four games are played, but it definitely feels like a Cleveland moment. It's one of those things that, like, okay, here we go again. And I lived in Ohio during this time, within the Columbus area. And my job was to, for all practical purposes, to watch TV. And so I'd have to follow. Yeah, it was a good job. Yep. So paid well. So, but I had to, but part of the job though was to kind of follow these games for disaster incidents or whatnot. So following these games, and it just kind of felt like, okay, here we go again. We have this big moment of hope of, okay, we finally get LeBron back into Ohio, and he's going to put a championship, and here we got Kevin Love back, and it's another moment of getting your heart ripped out again and again and again. And 2016 really was that year of getting your heart ripped out. I mean, that's the year that the Indians lost to the Cubs.
Oh, yeah.
That's the year that the RNC was held in Cleveland.
It's a big L.
It was a rough, rough year. But no, again, remember how the Indians' loss will be later in the year. But it just felt like another one of those. Here we go again, Cleveland. Even that second game, okay, you hang with him for a little bit, and then Draymond Green just goes off, and you're like, okay, here we go again. So even though Golden State wasn't necessarily counting things right then, I think a lot of Cleveland fans were, what we can do.
Absolutely. And the national perception of them too, right, is this team we've watched dominate everyone all year. Games one and two, nothing's changed. Still in the Warriors, that is. Nothing's changed. They're here to dominate. They've been the best team by far, and they're continuing that. Not to mention, as you talk about Cleveland, LeBron's been there before, right? He left. He had to, in the national perception, had to go to Miami and team up with Wade and Bosch to get himself some championships, right? He got close before with Cleveland, or maybe not close, but with Cleveland, he had so much success in the first iteration of that. And so now it kind of feels like, yeah, LeBron, I mean, he won down in Miami, but this is LeBron in Cleveland again, where we come up short. So speaking of Cleveland, game three, go home to Cleveland. What happens? LeBron James, Kyrie Irving come out and they put on a show, and they show that desperation. I'm not going to talk too much about betting lines and stuff like that. I know the betting line, you can look it up. There's different takes as far as after game four, what the Cavs odds were to win that series. But when you think about game threes in the NBA Finals, I always love betting that home team that's down 0-2, because they come out just so desperate. And there's talent, and talent overcomes so much. There's coaching overcomes so much. But you see in sports time and time again, desperation is something that is tough to factor and tough to really quantify. And so game three, they come out, they win by 30, 120 to 90 at home there. They get 32 points from LeBron. They get, I think, 30 from Kyrie. Tristan Thompson comes out and has himself a game with 13 rebounds. Love actually had suffered a concussion, an elbow, I think, to the head in game two and wound up being out in game three. But it didn't matter on the boards as Tristan was able to get 13 rebounds, and they out-rebounded Golden State by 20, like in that game three. Curry didn't have a great game, 6 turnovers. I know there was a lot of talk about from Coach Steve Kerr about the officiating and what have you. And I think some of that's to be expected. You go to somebody else's home, you know, you go to that. In 2020, we've become accustomed to watching sporting events without fans, but I think they, to give them some credit, you go home and you've got, you know, that atmosphere and stuff for game three, which leads to a Cavs win. So that leads us to game four, which for anyone that you might ask in reviewing the 2016 finals, game four is the defining point. It's the fork in the road. So it's a tough, you know, back and forth game. You know, it's a fun rewatch. There's just, you can tell again, that desperation from the Cavs, the resolve and the talent from the Warriors shining through. Curry had 38 in this game, 7 threes. You know, it's kind of back and forth, but the Warriors definitely established themselves in that game as far as they established themselves well in control of that game. Then with under 3 minutes left, LeBron James winds up pushing Draymond Green to the floor. And I've rewatched this quite a few times in preparation for this. He pushes him to the floor. He shoves him to the ground and then just full steps over him. Green, I think, takes offense to that.
No.
Yeah. I mean, any person would probably take some offense to that, but Draymond Green's going to do something about it. So
remember, these guys are going back and forth for a full, for the game, chirping back and forth. And I mean, a guy like LeBron James knows how to push someone's button at the right time to get him to do something stupid.
LeBron James is one of the, by any accounts or measures, one of the smartest basketball players we've ever seen as far as his understanding and knowledge of the game, or maybe the nuances in the game too. So he pushes him to the floor, steps over him, and Green throws an arm up into LeBron's groin area.
Oh gosh.
And what I like to call the nut punch heard around the world. So he, and then he gets back up. LeBron obviously takes offense to that. And Green, you know, throws another arm into LeBron's body. I think it's funny. You talk about like them going back and forth, cause you know, they play a lot of positions where they'll be in contact with each other. And it's gotta be interesting as far as the dynamic, right? So Green is a NBA champion, part of this historic team, and LeBron's still looking at him like, okay, like you're not me, you know? And so I think there's an element with all the jawing, with all the back and forth where LeBron was fed up and Green was probably fed up, you know, back with the physicality of the game. But like you said, LeBron just kind of keeping his cool, Green, not so much with the arm into LeBron's groin there. And there's back and forth as far as what happened. LeBron says he said stuff to him. He called him a little bitch and, you know, and he didn't like that and all this stuff, you know, kind of innocuous in my opinion, as far as both.
Yeah. The chirping's going to go back and forth in the result of the, you know,
it's going to happen. I'll say this too. This may be controversial a little bit. I actually don't think I know you, again, you can watch it, go ahead and be like, it's a huge part of this review. I don't really think it was that egregious.
The nut shot or the LeBron manhandling Draymond and knocking him over?
So here's my take, and you can call me crazy or whatever, but in the rewatch of it, and even a little bit in the moment from what I can recall, I felt like the push down and the step over was more egregious than the swinging of the arm into the groin, just as far as like actual violence of crime committed. And this throws into debate for years and years and years to come is because Green winds up getting suspended from this game four. We know that, right? He gets suspended from this. It changes the dynamic of what the Cavs are able to do moving forward, as far as gives them a little bit of a window with just how dominant Draymond had been. You know, he had an incredible game too, but especially on the boards and on defense, like he's just an anchor for that team. So the question is, you know, do the Cavs have a shot in this series if Draymond's not suspended?
I mean, I think they do. I think anyway, because well, first off, because the groin punch was egregious.
I disagree, because
knocking someone over can be a basketball move, right? We see guys get knocked over all the time, whether or not LeBron did on purpose, you know, he probably did, whatever, but that's a basketball move that he made there. Swinging for someone's nutsack is not a basketball move, no matter how you look at it. There's no move in the basketball repertoire where it involves going for someone's nuts, you know, and then followed up with another body shot too. But I think the thing that showed is that Draymond, if he's not having a good game, is easy to manipulate into making bad decisions.
Yes, as far as getting under his skin. Yeah,
he's easy got to get under his skin. So I think if anything, it probably would have helped the Cavs more, perhaps, if Draymond was on the floor, because that would have meant another opportunity to get another stupid mistake from him. But I rest the fact that, you know, bodying someone is a basketball move. Nut checking someone, at least, you know, I know the Warriors were a trend-setting NBA team, as you mentioned before. I don't think that's the trend. I don't think that's the new wave of basketball.
Yeah,
NBA is nut shots.
Exactly. Yeah, no, hopefully that's not something we should trend up. I guess the biggest thing to me, I understand that point, and it is a valid point as far as someone that I don't know if we have agreement in this, but I think, you know, I think I believe, and maybe you do too, that LeBron kind of goaded him into this a little bit.
Oh, 100%.
Definitely led to this reaction. It may not have been sure what the extent of the reaction was going to be, but knew there would be a reaction.
Do I think that LeBron planned to get his nuts punched that day? No, but I think he knew he was going to get a reaction from Green. And I think he hoped that the reaction be severe enough to warrant some kind of penalty.
The biggest thing to me in this scenario, though, is the suspension. So one thing that I think bears pointing out is in the Western Conference Finals, and this one is way worse, in my opinion. If you want an interesting look at, if you go down the rabbit hole of groin punches in the NBA, so Draymond had a kick against Steven Adams of the Thunder. If you just Google search Draymond kick Steven Adams, you'll see tons of clips of it. It's a full on leg swing up into the nether regions of Steven Adams. And he gets fined for that, but not suspended. But I believe my take is that because of that, he also had a flagrant foul, a flagrant one, I believe in the series before in the Western Conference against the Rockets as well, where he just shoved somebody down, but kind of blatantly so. But the Steven Adams kick to me is a much more egregious foul. He's fined but not suspended. But this is we're talking maybe 10 days, 2 weeks before this happens. So this is still in the mind of officials, still in the mind of, I think, the league office, having seen that happen in the Western Conference Finals. And I think, to me, that's what makes this not just a flagrant one, but also a suspension for Draymond, is kind of that history.
And don't forget too, I know we don't like to talk about this as sports fans, but don't forget also who he's doing this against.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's Steven Adams in the Western Conference Finals, who's Steven Adams, but this time you're going against the guy who he's the reason why most people not in Cleveland, not in Oakland are turning their TVs on is to see LeBron James. So you need to protect your, you know, it's the whole, you know, it's why Tom Brady gets more flags on him than Cam Newton. It's the idea of just star players are normally better protected than the non, you know, than the right, no-name right. guys.
Yeah, Luton for the Jacksonville Jaguars is not going to get the same calls as Tom Brady, right? Like you play the same position, it doesn't matter. No, that's a great point. That's a great point by you as far as this being LeBron James also leading to the suspension. So kind of beat that to death. But that's game four. Like game four is that turning point. So
Golden State still wins this game. Nut punching aside, they find a way to win and now they're up 3-1.
Yeah, they wind up winning again, kind of a close contest. They wind up winning 108-97 game four, but take that all important 3-1 lead that we now know, you know, here in 2016, no team has ever come back from a 3-1 deficit like that. You know, it goes to the league office. Draymond gets suspended, leading into game five. Game five takes us back to Oakland. Like you said, with the Warriors up 3-1 and an opportunity to close this out. So game five happens out in Oakland. No Draymond Green. A little bit definitely missing on the defensive side of the ball for the Warriors. They try to put, you know, pieces together and make it work, right? Probably no sympathy from the Cavs because they were without their players. You know, it happens, right? NBA, any playoffs, any finals, any championship game, you get there and you roll with what you have. So game five opens up. LeBron and Kyrie, this is the game where they go off. They absolutely go off. They both score 41 points. I think Mike Breen says it on the official broadcast there. But I believe it's the first time ever that teammates both combine or both have 41 points each in an NBA finals with Kyrie and LeBron doing that. One other kind of big moment from this, the Cavs go on to win 112-97 game five. The Warriors don't shoot very well as a team. They wind up shooting, just about 36%. They get 37 from Klay Thompson, but it's just not enough with what Kyrie and LeBron are doing. And then a bigger factor, kind of those pieces, that are built around stars, especially in the NBA, makes so much of a difference. You see that with, Kawhi winning with Toronto and stuff like that. Like it was the role players, these guys, like your stars will come out to play, but what happens to those supporting role players determines these championship games, these championship series. And one big note from game five is Andrew Bogut winds up getting injured, does something to his knee and winds up being out for the rest of the series. And he's had a pretty good series going into game five here. He's had a bunch of blocks and just kind of a presence around the rim, especially for the Warriors who are so known for this, death lineup of going small and really needing no Draymond game five. Bogut gets hurt, just kind of lacking any sort of rim protection there. So Cavs do come back or come out 112-97, win game five. The Warriors are talking about how they missed Draymond, understandably so, with that suspension, but kind of gets it a little closer here. Now we're talking 3-2 in favor of the Warriors going into game six, which goes back to Cleveland. Game six is interesting when you rewatch it and kind of look at it here. The Warriors kind of come out sluggish, right? The first quarter, kind of owned by the Cavs, back home again, feeling momentum from that game five win. The closest that the Warriors wind up getting here in game six is within 8 points. Curry gets in foul trouble after the game. I think Kerr winds up getting fined for his comments about officials. Just kind of a sloppy game from the Warriors, and specifically with foul trouble for Curry and that slow start. So game six winds up going to the Cavs in the favor of 115-101. Now, I don't know. I wanted to hear from you. This is where I'm always interested, in the moment in sports, in the moment in these cities or in these states. Cavs are down 3-1 and they get these back-to-back wins. And it's now we're looking at game 7 back in Oracle Arena, but you were down 3-1 and now you've got one game for it all.
Yeah, I think this is the moment. I think those fans who are honest enough about their belief wristbands and belief signs, I think this is when the moment they actually got them out and actually started believing. Whether or not they believed back in down 1-3 or even down 2-3, I think this is when, because I think once it got to the point where the series is tied 3-3 and you have to win one game, what better guy do you want to have to win one game than LeBron James? Because you know what he can do. You know he can take over one single game. So I think that's kind of the moment that, I think Cavs fans felt.
Yeah, you start
felt pretty good
that,
about that.
Yeah, yeah, that belief, that Believeland, right? That as it's come to be known. But that's where it really starts. And like you said, LeBron going into one game. I know he had one, I think it was game 3, where he scored under 20 points for the first time ever in a finals game. And he had 19 that game. But we're talking game 4, 40, or game 4, he had a great game. 36 points, I think it was what he averaged in the in game 4. Game 5, 41. Game 6, 42 for LeBron. So like you said, going into game 7, a winner takes all game. It's been up and down. The Warriors were so good all year. They were so good in the early games. The last couple definitely gone towards the Cavs, with LeBron leading the way, Kyrie. Tristan Thompson, I feel like, doesn't get enough credit in this series. He had a really good series. And this is even leading in game 7. He's very good in game 7 as well. But credit to him and shout out to him. Might have been helped with Draymond's suspension and Bogut's injury, but Tristan made the most of it and wound up a lot of work there on the boards for Thompson. All right, so going into game 7, no team had ever come back from a 3-1 deficit to win an NBA title. And this game does not disappoint. If you're going to watch one game from the series, this is obviously the game to watch. Maybe with a little detour for the last or that 3-minute mark in game 4, if you go down the rabbit trail of some, but game 7, all the electricity, all the, just the hype going into this, historic team versus LeBron's chance to win it for his hometown, for Cleveland, a title. Game 7 is where we're at. This game has 20 lead changes and 11 ties. It's good. I mean, most game 7s, again, a little betting help or betting note, I guess, for what I look at. Game 7s, always bet the under. Just always do it. Under is one of the most boring things to bet because you're rooting for no scoring. But game 7s are always really close because everyone's just puckered tight. Everybody's nervous about it. But this game was not, in my opinion, not sloppy. It was a really well contested game. Like I said, 20 lead changes. It comes down to the end, right? So with 4.5 minutes to go in this series, in game 7, Klay Thompson makes, I believe, a layup or a jumper, winds up tying the game at 89. So we're buckled in for a finish. And this is where the craziness winds up happening, in this series. One of my favorite things in all of sports is moments, right? That this is part of why I love doing this podcast with you is moments. I love how just in a moment, how sports can make you feel. And the moment for me in this game that we all well know is that Mike Breen call of Andre Iguodala driving down the lane with LeBron chasing him from behind. And it's the, oh, blocked by James. Like, I get goosebumps still hearing that and still rewatching that now. And I was cheering for the Cavs during this series, but I'm not a Cavs fan. I'm kind of a LeBron fan, just appreciate his greatness. But that moment of this, these stakes, this game, and we've all seen that chase down block by LeBron to deny Iguodala that layup is what it looked like. Golden State winds up going on and missing their final six shots in this game.
Incredible for a team that's setting
right.
Yeah, NBA they just
there were turnovers. I know they had some foul trouble. Curry does have foul trouble in game seven. He actually winds up having three first half fouls, which really limits his ability to get into the flow of this game. We've got that block by James. We've got Golden State. I know Curry has a really bad turnover in the final minutes as well, where they've been fancy and they've been flashy all year. And this in the final four and a half of this game is really the only time that I remember this entire year where it winds up biting them in the ass a little bit, with those turnovers, with the sloppy play, the block by James, and then we all know the Kyrie three over Curry in the final moments of this game that sealed it for Cleveland. And what what a shot that was from Kyrie. I mean, it's a shot only a flat earther could make, to be honest. But as far as footing goes, his footing was fine on the flat floor there for Kyrie. Just elevates Kyrie elevates over Curry, who does a good job closing out on the shot, but just a deep three. And it's poetic to me. This team that's built on three-pointers and Curry setting it with 402 in 26, setting the record 402 in 2016. That Kyrie Irving hits that three over Curry. It's just poetic. It really is to me. And leads us to this remarkable moment of the Cavaliers achieving something never achieved before, overcoming a 3-1 deficit. And most importantly, I know to the fans of Cleveland and to LeBron James himself, bringing that title to Cleveland.
It's weird because that last 4 or 5 minutes is almost anticlimactic. Like, with the exception of the block, the block was incredible, the Kyrie shot's incredible. With the exception of those two moments, it was a really boring 4 minutes to end that game. It's almost like, okay, I guess the Cavs won. Like that's it now. So it really wasn't any kind of last second, like as you would expect in a game this close. It wasn't trading baskets back and forth for the final 4 minutes. It was just really good defense by both teams, with one team kind of getting a little bit more of the upper hand.
And just enough to win the game. So as I mentioned, it was tied at 89, I think around 4 minutes, maybe somewhere in that neighborhood. But the game winds up, to your point, ending at Cavs 93, Warriors 89. So you're right. Those last few minutes, I mean, the tension is incredible. But as far as nobody's making shots aside from that three from Kyrie. Like no one's making those.
For both teams to go on a scoring drought for that long of time is just—it was weird. It didn't seem like great defense either. It wasn't like oh man, they're playing great defense. It just seemed like sloppy. That maybe the moment was getting to either team is kind of whoever's going to crash first. And I think it was just kind of an anticlimactic ending to a storied comeback there.
Yeah, yeah, and for what the series was and for all the up and downs and for all the offense in this series, remarkable that those final minutes were so void of any offensive efficiency. But Cleveland does enough. They do what's necessary. LeBron puts this team on his back. And that's not a shot to any of his teammates or the greatness of Kyrie in the series or Love or Thompson, but make no mistake about it. This was LeBron James putting Cleveland on his back and especially down 3-1 coming back for the most historic upset really in NBA Finals history with the 3-1 end of game four being factored in. To me, that's what makes this so remarkable and what makes it so historic.
Yeah, I think it's after that game, or the moments after this game, is where LeBron says to himself, okay, this is when I become the greatest player in NBA history, was from that game right there. I'm not taking it away from Michael Jordan, but I think this put LeBron James as the greatest basketball player to ever play the game, just because of what he did, you look at the teams that MJ fielded on the floor versus the teams that the talent level that LeBron James had, who he went up against too. Michael Jordan never went up against the likes of the Golden State Warriors as far as just dominant. They were the record setting team when Jordan was playing with them. They never had to face something as powerful and as good as the Warriors were.
Yeah, so, the Warriors were the 90s Bulls teams as far as their ability, the records they're setting, those types of things. Like, that's the comparison. And I always wrestle with this. It's something that I think will be debated not just this year, not just 2016, not just 2020, but for years to come, as far as LeBron versus Michael Jordan. But this moment, these NBA finals, I 100% agree with you that I think what LeBron James did in these finals, we've never seen before and may not ever see again. Like, his dominance and his ability to rise above everything, and just the output of what he brings to a basketball team, what he brings to the NBA, is incredible with that, and he now sits at, is he 3-6 or 4-6 in titles, something like that, LeBron. Yeah. Now having won with both, with the Heat, the Cavs, and then this past year here with the Lakers as well. That's incredible of itself too. All the turnover, as far as the rosters he's played with, all the different things he might come against, all the different opponents he might have, the different obstacles he might have. He's always in it. To me, one of the big things for LeBron is what he did in that stretch where he was in the NBA finals for, I think, 8 to 10 years in a row or something like that. It felt like where he was, and he didn't win them all, obviously, but just to get there time and time again. I don't know, and this might be hyperbolic, but I'm trying to think in my head right now of an athlete that has had his longevity too, as far as just how good he's been, how much he's played, how long he's been doing this, how few injuries he's had as far as that have derailed him at any point in a season. It's just absolutely incredible. And to me,
the only two athletes you can think of that have had that kind of history would be Tiger Woods for golf, just in terms of dominating his sport for years and years and years, and then Serena Williams in tennis. Apart from those two players, LeBron is probably right there as far as the most dominant athlete in his game.
Yeah, just as far as like 1A, 1B, and then a couple down, you start talking about some of his competitors, his current competitors. So this ends a 52-year drought for the city of Cleveland, this championship. Obviously well celebrated, I'm sure, well earned. I don't know if you can remember back to what it was like, living in this state, living in this area, with this championship, something that has been out of reach for so long.
Yeah, I mean, definitely when there was the whole parade and everything like that, team, or watching that parade on TV and seeing the joy that, in the city to see the championship come home. Obviously that was short lived as the RNC would be held there a few months later. So the joy was turned to sorrow pretty quickly. But other than that, it was a good moment for a little while there in Cleveland.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I wanted to read one comment that Paul Flannery, a writer for SB Nation, had written shortly after this game. Because to Cleveland, LeBron was the was the Messiah, right? To Cleveland, he was the man that was from 18, 19 years old, supposed to take them to this promised land that he achieves in 2016. And Paul Flannery writes, game sevens are rarely this good. There were 20 lead changes, 11 ties, and nothing ever felt answered until those last seconds ticked off the clock. That's when belief gave way to shock, and shock slowly dawned on everyone that the reality of the moment that was at hand. The Cleveland Cavaliers were freaking NBA champions. More than a half a century of Cleveland sports heartbreak melting away in the warm glow of the Larry O'Brien trophy, which LeBron cradled in his arms. And that's when the reality gave way to tears. You can believe in LeBron James. And that's right. That was the Nike campaign witness. You know, that was the after the fact here, believe land. Like this really changed things for such a, for a fan base and a sports area that loves their Browns, that loves their Indians, that loves their Cavs, and have seen very little reward of that sports fandom and love up until this 20s, and felt like you said earlier, this was the same old after game four down 3-1 against this historic team. This is what we know in Cleveland. We're just going to, we're not going to win these. We're not going to be at the top of the sports mountain. And LeBron changed that in 2016 against incredible odds.
Yeah. I think the fact that he did it then too, which is makes the story just all the more poetic. Would it have been nice to win in 2015? Sure. But I think the fact that he lost in 2015, comes back, goes down 3-1 and does it against a record setting Warriors team, for him to come back to, I mean, the Hollywood script writes itself, right? The kid from Akron comes back home to win his team a championship. That's what happens. At least, you know, this is the kind of thing that you see in cheesy football movies, yeah. You know, cheesy Hallmark football movies kind of thing, right? Like it's almost too perfect but I think the only thing that kind of saves it from being too perfect is, again, how boring that last 4 minutes was going back and forth, with the exception of the block and the shot. But again, you could see you can see the raw emotion on LeBron if you watch the ending again and see him overcome with emotion, see what winning that means for him, what winning that means to bring the championship back home to the city.
And again, credit to LeBron James for the way that his mind, I mean, this is a man who from early high school years has been in the spotlight. So it's no mistaking the fact that he knew what he was doing when he goaded Draymond Green into the nut punch. He knew what he was doing when he was holding the Larry O'Brien trophy and he yells an iconic phrase of Cleveland, this is for you. And, you know, just those moments. And I keep coming back to that in each of these podcasts, the moments that define different things in sports, the moments that define things for me as a sports watcher, but also for these athletes and these players that actually put in the work. You know, what a moment for LeBron James. What do you, what's your takeaways as we looked back through this here this month? And man, I tell you listeners here, it feels like it's probably been about 2 months since we were with you with all the events between October and November here in the US of A, but it has only been a month. So as we looked at this 2016 finals here this month, what were your takeaways?
I mean, I think the first takeaway is no matter how much you feel like doing it, do not groin punch someone.
I'm going to hang on. I got to write that down. No punches. Okay.
But no, I think my biggest takeaway of this, and I know you've said this before in other episodes too, enjoy the game. So like especially in the last 4 minutes, I'm not a Cavs fan myself. I don't follow the NBA all that much, but being around Cavs fans in that moment, obviously the feeling was, you know, you kind of sense the anxiety that they had there watching the game and, you know, everybody on the edge of their seats and kind of watching that last 4 minutes, but enjoy the game. There's moments like this where it goes your way and you have a celebratory moment that happens. And there's also moments where it doesn't happen that way. The bounce don't go your way. That doesn't mean you can't enjoy the game and enjoy, enjoy watching the sport for the sport. I remember watching the 2014 NFC Championship, and just for Packers fans, I don't think I need to say any more than 2014 NFC Championship. And it took me, I remember I lost sleep over it. I was like, oh man, I can't believe you lost it. Like, you're so close, right? And then it kind of just hit me like, why am I doing this? I'm missing out on really enjoying the sport and having a fun time watching the sport. I don't play the game. It'd be fun if I could play the game. Sure, I don't play the game, but just enjoy the moments. Not every bounce is going to go your way. So enjoy the ones that do. With ones that don't go your way, enjoy the little things that happen in there. So I think doing that helped make sports more enjoyable and make sports a lot more fun to watch when you're not trying to get yourself invested into it. And you kind of enjoy the moments for what they are and enjoy the opposite team's moments too for what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I'm not an old man by any means of the expression yet, but the older I get, because I used to, we're brothers. I used to cry when my team would lose. I used to cry when I would lose, just so invested. I've been a sports fan. One of my earliest memories is watching Dan Marino with my father or with our father, as a young kid. Like, sports has just been a huge part of things that I enjoy in life. And the older I get, to your point, the more I just appreciate the moments. I appreciate the Hail Marys, regardless of who's catching them on the other side. I appreciate the incredible blocks, regardless of if it's against my team. I appreciate, the game-winning goals or the penalty kicks or the, the overtime thriller in an NHL game or things like that. Like, just like, as you mentioned, just to enjoy this really stupid thing we love called sports for what it is and for the joy it can bring and for the amazement it can bring, to see things happen that you didn't think were going to happen, such as a 3-1 turnaround in the NBA finals. I have grown so much to appreciate this has never been done before aspect of a lot of things in sports, and this one being it for sure. I think for myself, looking back through this, through the 2016 and these finals, one thing that stood out to me is, and this is just something for myself, I think kind of a lens of which maybe I'm watching or looking at these through what I'm going through. And that's to control what you can control, to put in the effort that you can, and understand that sometimes the bounces go in your favor. Sometimes the shots go in your favor and sometimes they don't. And I think of that for LeBron and for his career, which is now he's moved on yet again, but his career in Cleveland and all the labor put into attempting to win a championship and this being a remarkable way to achieve that. But just that aspect of like, all he could do is show up every year, and he has for years and years and years. All he could do is show up every year and give his all. He's had so many games. He's had so many final games where he's scored 30, 40 points, whatever have you. And they have not won or have not ended with a ring and an O'Brien trophy. And this one did, and kind of cousin to your point, as far as the, just to enjoy that moment, but also to understand that you putting in the work, that success might happen, that success may or may not happen, but that the labor of love, the actual physical, you going to work, you going to whatever your daily task is and putting your all into it is the gratifying end. Like, that is the good solution, is you or the good resolve rather, is you having the understanding that you gave this your all. And when it works and when it achieves success and when it achieves notoriety, that's awesome. But just that consistency, I think that's the thing I'm looking for here, or that I'm taking away here, is that consistency of just going in, putting your all in that LeBron did for so many years in Cleveland. And so many seasons ended without that trophy, and this one did. And that's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great point, especially with understanding that just because you put everything into it, like LeBron led the finals in the previous year in scoring and rebounds and assists there, but didn't win the Larry O'Brien trophy. So to your point, it doesn't always work out that way. And to do it for the love of the game, whatever you're doing, do it for the love of the game instead of for the accolade or for that moment. That's a great point. I think if you watch a guy like LeBron James play, you have to conclude that he loves playing the game of basketball. And that's, at the end of the day, that's why he does it. He's doing this because he loves playing the game of basketball. And so whatever it is in our life that we're doing, do it for the love of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just that, the win is you giving your all towards something you care about, not necessarily the actual end result, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes, guess what? Sometimes that's not your profession. That's okay. I think there's ideas that like we have to have a profession that's going to satisfy us or make us, you know, feel a certain way as far as career wise. And, but sometimes what matters isn't that moment. It's the moments at home. It's the moments, with friends and family that mean a lot to you. And so it's the idea of finding that thing that matters the most to you and investing appropriate time and energy and doing it. You know, another thing too is when LeBron did this for his city, right? He did this for Cleveland. He's doing this for his teammates. This isn't he's not doing this for himself. I think he enjoys playing the game, but I don't think it's selfishly motivated, at least not that I can tell, that he would come back to Cleveland and do this. So find something that's, you know, people talk about something that's bigger than yourself. I think it's kind of an overused phrase, but find something out there that we can invest our hearts into and pursue that as much as we can.
And give it everything you got. Give it 100%. And that's the joy. The joy is to give your all. And sometimes, as in 2016 for LeBron James, you're rewarded with a trophy. You're rewarded with a win for those efforts. And I would be willing to bet a large sum of money that if you hooked LeBron up to a lie detector test and asked him his championship that is the most special to him, probably don't even need a lie detector test. He'd probably just tell you straight up, this has probably got to be it. Like he's
had 100%.
He's won so much in his life. He's won NBA finals with multiple teams, three of them now. But I guarantee you, like you said, this was something that meant the world to him. And to do it in this fashion is just the icing on top of a very, very incredible cake. So
yeah, cake that's still being...
Cake that's still having layers put on it. Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about LeBron James and he's the, you know, he's the reigning champion right now. So like his story isn't over yet, which is what makes it so incredible. We talk about the comparison with MJ and LeBron is LeBron's still going. He's still like,
yeah, he's still writing it.
We're having a debate right now. And one guy is still on the court getting stuff done, which tells you, who knows what happens in 5 years when he hangs up his laces, what we'll conclude there.
Yeah, no, he's still writing his history or his Wikipedia page here. Yeah.
He's still blocking shots.
Yeah, no, he definitely is. Incredible win for him and Anthony Davis too in the bubble NBA finals we saw this year. So that is the 2016 NBA finals. Hope you enjoyed reviewing it with us as well here on Further Review. Do yourself a favor. You want, we're not at a loss for sports right now. It seems like there's a lot going around, but we take it each day at a time, each week at a time. If you get a moment and you're missing some sports nostalgia, look up some of these games, look up all but the boring 4.5 minutes at the end of game seven. Look up Draymond Green nut punches, whatever is your fancy there. But some really fun stuff to look back through, some really entertaining games and incredible players. I mean, we rightfully so talked about the Warriors and LeBron James, but Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, these guys are still out there playing at an incredible level and coming back, some of them from injuries. So the 2016 finals, never say die, Cleveland Cavaliers come back from a 3-1 deficit to write their own story in the annals of NBA history here.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and share it with someone. If you didn't enjoy it, let someone know. Either way, smash that share button.